Hello, and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Daryl Etherington.
And this week, we are going to review The Politician, a new series on Netflix. I think we were going to try to review it last week, but it turns out we had a giant tech conference and no one had a chance to watch it. But I think we were pretty happy with how Disrupt went, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it just so happens that Anthony and I literally tag team being on stage at any given time. So when I go off and have my chill time is when Anthony's on, and when he's off and has his, like, as relatively chill as it gets at Disrupt time, I'm on. And so we just never got to come and talk about The Politician. But the show, I think, went really well. I mean, I imagined all the worst possible things that could have happened, and only like two or three happened. So that's a big win in event world.
Yeah.
What was the highlight for you?
What were the things that happened? What were the bad things? Oh, okay. Well, let's go to highlights first.
Actually, the bad things are really more like that was just me like kind of teasing it to let people know it's not an easy journey, but we're not going to talk about those. Let's just talk about the happy things. So one of my happiest, my peak, right? If you do like pit and peak, my peak was getting to talk to, this sounds like kind of cheap, but getting to talk to Will Smith backstage. I just feel like he is 20% better than I expected him to be. And I expected him to be what I've known for the last 20 years, which is already pretty fantastic. And he was just awesome. And then when he was leaving the stage, he called me his girl. I don't know if you guys caught that.
Oh, I caught it.
So that was really, really cool and fun for me. I mean, there were a lot of very interesting tech people there, but I talk to tech people every day. It's pretty rare that I talk to Will Smith. So what about you guys?
It was interesting because I feel like in, you know, this year, and Jordan, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I got the sense that really this is a Disrupt where in general we kind of wanted to focus, kind of refocus on that entrepreneurial audience that Disrupt is, you know, started out being for, refocus on making sure that we're getting like really substantive tech industry discussions on stage. And so you might think that you wouldn't have a lot of media figures, a lot of entertainment figures, but we still ended up having a pretty good representation in terms of celebrities. I mean, part of it was just, you know, having Will Smith on stage. We also had Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and we had Simone Yacht from YouTube. And, you know, some esports
Williams?
People.
My goodness, Anthony. I was waiting for you to think about it, but it couldn't come to you. It didn't come to you. You just forgot all
about it. I mean, like, I think Simone Yetch is probably one of the coolest human beings on the planet, but it would be really hard for me to list her before Maisie Williams when I was talking about the celebrities that came to Disrupt.
Although that's an interesting question, because I bet there are people for whom Simone Yetch is a bigger deal than Maisie Williams.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
There definitely are like hardcore fans of hers, because I'm now a hardcore fan of hers. When I met her, I was like, I knew what she was all about, and I had seen like some clips of her videos and stuff, but Brian was really excited to have her. And so I said, yeah, let's just do it. And when I met her, I was like, wow, you are just the coolest person in this building. And it's like a huge fucking building, you guys. It's a conference. It's a convention center. Like, it's not a tiny little building. And she was 100% the coolest person in it the whole time she was there. I have no doubts about that.
Daryl, what was the highlight for you?
I don't know. I took a lot of pictures. I had a new camera there that was really fun. And the celebrities made it fun because it's better to take pictures of celebrities than non-celebrities. Mostly for...
Thanks a lot.
Skincare reasons? I don't know. They can afford better skincare. But
skincare reasons? Jesus Christ.
Well...
You're just like shitting on everyone. Can you chill, please?
Everyone's fine. Everyone's doing a good job.
I didn't realize you were so closely looking at my pores. Well, I feel really
here's
insecure.
The deal. This camera I got is maybe even too good for this job because it's like a 61 megapixel camera and I can see every single pore when I'm like done afterwards. It resolves very, very high resolution photos. So it's like, and then, you know, we don't use them that big, so it's fine. But when it reduces down to like a small size, it just makes them really nice and crisp and clean looking. But and it's not critical. That's just saying these are people who part of their full-time job is a skincare routine, right? Like you can't compete with that. That's not anybody else's full-time job.
I would also argue that, I mean, I think that we had a lot of very attractive people on stage. And, you know, in the course of our jobs, we've run into a fair number of celebrities. I wanted to circle back to Will Smith in a second, which is just that I think in general, celebrities are like, you know, they still look like 10 to 20% less attractive in person just because like they're not being shot from their most flattering angle. They don't have like the full, you know, motion picture, makeup routine. But Will Smith is in person just as incredibly good looking as he is on the screen. And it was very, very strange. So, I mean, even by the standards that Daryl is talking about, I think Will Smith is a cut above.
Not even just good looking. Like he, you know, I felt like, you know, this could just be, and it is, it's like 95% the fact that he is a charismatic person, and you can tell how he's built his career kind of on the back of that. Like he just felt like super authentic. And like I also think when you get to a certain point in your career, like Will Smith, where you can, he's not like some young celebrity that's getting pushed into the things that he doesn't want to do, like press junkets and bullshit. I'm sure there's some stuff he doesn't want to do, but for the most part, he like signs up for the projects he's excited about. He signs up for the interviews and stuff he's excited about. And it felt to me like it was something he, you know, sometimes you meet celebrities and it just feels like they're bummed to be there. Like the sheen and like the mystery and the kind of like perfection of it just fades away. And they're like this real person who's just in a bad mood. And like, he was none of that. Like it felt like he was just really happy to be there and like had a really good time. And I think everyone in the, you know, in the room had a really good time. I think like we were all just kind of like hanging on his every word. What is he going to do next kind of thing? And you realize a little bit like beyond his acting skill or his good looks or his musical talents or anything like that, like he makes big bucks for a reason. And it's because he had the whole room captivated, you know. It was crazy. I was like, I had like emergencies backstage that I was like, no, not right now. I'm watching Will.
Yeah, I think it was John Evans, one of our columnists, who tweeted that, and I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially that, you know, now he knows that movie star charisma is a real thing. That like having been in the room with Will Smith, like it's genuinely a different quality of charisma from pretty much anything else I've seen. It was amazing. This is also the part where we would talk about reader response, but we've taken a couple of weeks off, although I did do a bonus interview with Malka Older about Cereal Box, which you guys should check out. So the only real reader response we've gotten is some spam about whether or not we want to buy some construction equipment. And I think I'm going to go with no on that one.
What? Why?
Well, what kind of equipment is it? Don't jump to hasty conclusion.
Don't speak
I think
us.
It was some sort of like, I don't know, like a rolling thing. I don't remember exactly, and I closed it because I was having technical issues earlier.
Is it anything that could fix the hole in my bedroom roof?
Oh yeah, that'd be useful.
Would it be useful, or would it just be more shit?
Well, the roller wouldn't. That would crush your roof. But maybe there's some other kind of device.
Yeah, I'll write them back. Construction device.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, if you would like to sell us some construction equipment or offer your feedback on the work we're doing or on whatever we're reviewing or things we should be reviewing, you can email us at originalcontent@techcrunch.com. And if it's interesting, we will happily share it on the episode. Sometimes if we're just bored, we'll share it anyway, even if it's not interesting.
Yeah, like we just shared this construction bullshit.
That's right. So let's talk about The Politician. And I think we can do, you know, again, a sort of non-spoiler general impressions discussion. And then we can talk a little bit about spoilers at the end as well. So some of the context here, and this is not so much the story, which we'll get to in a second, is just this is the first show that Ryan Murphy has made for Netflix. And so there's a lot of attention on it because about a year and a half ago, he signed a $300 million deal with Netflix. And that's going to involve a lot of different shows, a lot of different movies. This is just the first one down the pike. But I think there is a little bit of a sense of, oh, is this what $300 million paid for? And so the series is about this character, Peyton, played by Ben Platt. He's going to be the politician of the title. And each season is going to cover a different election that he competes in. The first season is about his high school election. And yeah, what did you guys think?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. A lot happens in that show. Where to start? Exactly.
Okay, I have some just top line stuff that I need to get off my chest. Ben Platt is an extraordinary talent. Musically, I would say he's like one of the most beautiful singers I've ever heard in my life. Like, I just love his voice, everything about it. I've loved it since I first heard it on Pitch Perfect. And he gives a good performance, so I'm down with that. It does feel very Glee-esque. Glee is one of Mr. Murphy's other shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It has like a lot of glee-ness about it. It like the conversations are super fast, which I enjoy, although it's completely silly for like the actual content. We're talking about like high school children, even though they're obviously wealthy and very smart. They go to a very nice school. They don't talk like that. I'm sorry. Like, that's just not a real thing. And I am constantly distracted by that. But the thing that distracts me the very most that I couldn't really get past is the bonkers ass set design.
Okay. which sets in particular?
There's a scene where Peyton, all of them, to be clear, all of them, like this Malibu high school is distracting just in that it's like so luxe, like it doesn't feel like a real thing. But that is minor when we talk about like, what about the living room or the dining room in Peyton's girlfriend's house? Like with the bear. And
that was
shit.
Great. I or like that. I liked all of
about,
that.
What about Peyton's bed with like the four-poster bed with like the Victorian thick-ass like, oh, yeah, consummation curtains and the upholstered bed headboard? Like, I get that he's rich. You can do rich without like, I am rich. You know what I mean? Like, you can, I don't know. It was really distracting to me. All of the colors and clothing. It just like, I don't know. Everything felt so exaggerated. And I think that's supposed to be part of it, right? Like, no one talks the way they do. No one feels emotions the way that these people do. No one like expresses them even remotely the way that these people do. So I get that everything's kind of like exaggerated, like turned up the saturation on everything, but it was just a lot. I couldn't focus. I was like, where and when are we? Like, what am I looking at? I just felt like that a lot.
Yeah, I felt like, so I thought a lot about this too. I didn't really think about the actual set dressings. I thought more about the cinematography because it felt to me like, kind of stage showy, which I guess makes sense for a Ryan Murphy thing. But also, it felt like, what's his face? The guy, the director who does all of the Wes Anderson. It felt like Wes Anderson somewhat.
Yeah.
And except without a muted palette and instead with like an exaggerated, oversaturated palette. And to me, that was like not a great combo. It was like, oh no, the good things about the Wes Anderson cinematography are thrown away and the bad stuff is kept. And then it was, yeah, too much for me. I didn't like it. I really didn't. I thought it was like a nice try, but you failed in a way that made it painful to look at rather than pleasant. Right. Like, it's like, it's like one of those things where it's like, if you pull this off, this looks great. If you don't pull it off, it looks terrible. So, well, although, I mean, I guess I'm known for the high extremity stakes of my opinions. Yeah.
That's interesting because, you know, I definitely have reservations. I mean, I think probably of the three of us, I like this show the most, but also that in as much as I do have reservations, they're more about the writing. I felt like the look of it, I was completely fine with. I liked the slightly cartoony aspect. I liked this sort of like very kind of fast pace of both the dialogue and sometimes of the individual scenes and the cutting. And the whole thing has this very kind of heightened, almost, you know, again, slightly cartoonish feeling. And I thought that was all fine. I think it's where they tried to then add some substance into the writing. I think they start to get tripped up a little, but I really was not. Well, I would say that it took a while to get used to. So I watched the first episode and I wasn't sure I was super into the show. But by the time I finished the second episode, I felt like I was on the show's wavelength. I was, you know, again, I didn't necessarily think it was a great show, but I thought it was really fun. And I blew through all 8 episodes in basically a single day.
It's only 8 episodes, eh?
That's right.
Felt like more.
How far did you get, Carol?
I had finished it. I did have, I marathoned through some of it yesterday afternoon. And that's when
I have seen everything but maybe the last 35 minutes or so.
And, oh, okay.
I mean, I guess I'll hold, actually. Come back to me when we get into spoilers, because I have to talk about how confusing the first 20 minutes of the last episode were for me. I just have to bring it up.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, I think what I would say that I maybe had a bigger reservations about were, I think that fundamentally the show seems really invested in this idea of Peyton, the Ben Platt character, being this amazing, charismatic, visionary person with a dark side. Like at one point, his adoptive mother, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, and this is in the trailer, so it's not really a spoiler, she says to him, "Your ambition frightens me." And I mean, I think it's meant to be a little bit ridiculous because, again, we are talking about a high school election. But I think on some level, you're also supposed to take that seriously. This idea that he, you know, will change the world, but will it be for good or for evil? And at no point did I actually believe he was a particularly extraordinary person. I thought he was like fun to be around and good on camera, but like that everyone else, and particularly some of the stuff that happens towards the end of the season, the crux of it is that, you know, he has these followers who will who are like, "We're going to follow you to the White House. We will, you know, we're totally invested in Peyton Hobart becoming eventually president of the United States." And I have not seen him do anything in the show that really convinces me that he's that extraordinary. And so
yeah,
all of the scenes that revolve around that are, on some level, they fall flat for me.
Yeah, that, and they're bought in. A lot of his crew are bought into that from the very beginning, right? And he's not demonstrated anything. I mean, I guess it's a show, so they kind of have to have a central character and then they have to have supporting characters. But it really didn't. It was like, why are these people even throwing in with him? Like, what's the deal, right? And I think that's kind of what you're getting at. But I mean, what are we doing? Do we still want to share general opinions? Because I've been timid so far, but I really like, there are parts of it that I really loved. There were moments here and there that I really loved about the show, but overall I did not like this show. Did not like
it. You watched all of it.
And yet I watched all of it. I mean, I don't know. I was on a tear.
It's confusing.
It's a bit of a hate watch. I don't know that it even elevates to a hate watch, but there is an element of like, wait, what just happened? And then you like follow a thread because it's so frenetic and it's so scattered. There are so many things that happen and these things that get picked up and then that just kind of chases down this new avenue. And you're like, okay, I guess we'll go down this avenue for a while. What's happening over here? Plus, there are tons of great actors in it, like lots of great actors in it. So I think that also contributed to my wanting to watch it. It's just like some individual performances are like, oh, that's an interesting performance or that's an interesting person in that role. Maybe I want to watch this to see where that's going. But overall, I found it like, I mean, it reminded me of some of the things that it's been compared to already, I think, by other people who've critiqued it, like Election, right? But I didn't find any of the characters that redeeming. Actually, I mean, we were just talking about it before we started recording, but Insatiable, which me and Anthony also watched. Like, it reminded me of that in some of the worst ways. Me and Anthony famously did not like that television show.
Right. Well, it's funny because when I was first trying to convince you to finish the season, Daryl, I was describing this as Insatiable but good. And I think I stand behind that. Like, I mean, I think, again, I'm not saying that it's a perfect show by any stretch, but I think that it, whereas Insatiable wanted to sort of like push these boundaries and be sort of shocking and outrageous. I don't think this show is trying to be shocking, but it is trying to be kind of, you know, anything could happen. And, you know, and they're willing, you know, and people, they're sort of like no sacred cows, but it seems like to actually not just be doing that, like it actually has some sense of like what it does and doesn't want to show on screen, that like it's not just gonna like try to like do cheap shocks, but like is, but it is like kind of funny and over the top and ridiculous at times and sometimes borderline offensive, but in a way that worked for me, in a way that
we had
Insatiable
like
did.
A total of like 7 murder attempts in this show. Like, it's fucking bonkers, dude. Like, it's
yeah,
not a thing.
Yeah, there are
like
a
it's
lot.
That's not how.
No, and they're treated fairly lightly too. And then, I mean, I see it treats fairly lightly a couple things. Like, it treats not lightly, but relatively lightly. Or
what did you say?
Uses it as a motivator for the plot and doesn't really do much else.
Suicide?
With it. Like the suicide of one of the main
that
of one of the characters, right? Like, it just uses that to
yes,
to move the
I
plot.
Agree.
It also uses Munchausen by proxy. I mean, I don't know the actual prevalence of it, but it like uses it in a pretty utilitarian fashion, I would say. Like, a pretty ugly storyline about someone poisoning both their daughter and their granddaughter. I don't know. It just was like, well, are you playing this for laughs or what's going on here? Like, this is shitty. This is a shitty
well,
way to
and
go.
And I was like 45 minutes into the first episode program. And I was texting Daryl and I was like, I don't know what I'm watching. Like, what's happening? And he was like, everything. And that's like, that's the everything. Like, everything is happening in a way that you're just like kind of freaked out by. Like, I will say though that for all of the like rage that this inspired within me, I paid so much closer attention to this than, like, I would say of everything we watch that I do not choose for us to watch, like, i.e. y'all's suggestions, I pay like 35% attention to. Like, I'm watching my phone more than I'm watching the TV show. Not for lack of trying. I always give it a good college try at the beginning, but then it loses me and I just can't bring myself to give a shit. And
it becomes me. You're just trying to get through.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like genuinely watched this and like thought about it. Like, my sister called me in the middle of watching it last night and I was like, why can't I only talk about this stupid motherfucking show? Like, it's weird. It's really weird. Cause I don't think that I enjoyed it. Like, there were parts that I thought were pretty funny. There are a couple lines that really slay. Like, this isn't a spoiler because it's super, super early on. It's like in the first 5 minutes of the show. But there's a scene where River and the girl and Astrid are hooking up. And he's like, how come every time we have sex, like, doesn't really matter what I do. You still enjoy it. Like, you seem to really like it. Like, why doesn't it matter what I do? And are you faking it? She was like, yeah. And he was like, well, why are you faking it? I don't want you to. And she was like, I'm just giving you the confidence you need to be the man I know you'll become. I just thought that was the funniest fucking line.
And then she says, next time I'm going to work on authenticity.
Yeah. I'm going to pretend to be more authentic. And he was like, well, I don't want you to pretend to be authentic. I want you to be authentic. She's like, well, what's the difference? So there are a couple, like, the dialogue actually, I feel like the dialogue isn't that bad. It just needs to be fast forwarded like 16 years to when they're all in their mid 30s and all of it actually makes sense. And it's their real job for him to run for election. And it's his friend's job to be his campaign manager. I'm like kind of heartbroken for these people who are like living their lives as adults and they're not adults. I don't know. It's like, no wonder, you know, they're also unhappy. Like,
I think that also, like, you brought up that specific dialogue and just like it, that was good. And then there's another mirror moment with Gwyneth Paltrow later
along similar lines, and I thought that was really good too, because it seemed it was like an intentional callback to that, but it was with Ben's character and her, and it was like there were nice things that were happening in this show, and there were some really great moments of dialogue. Like I mean I wish I could remember some other specific ones, but there are ones where it just would stop me and I'd be like, oh my god, that's a fantastic line. But it was just so uneven and so wild, and so it just kept falling over itself trying to be extreme in certain ways that and it was really like I like Jordan, I also watched it very attentively and somewhat compulsively, but I also came away feeling a little bit sick in just like in terms of there was too much to absorb, and it didn't make me want to watch more of it. It made me want to avoid a similar experience in future where I get sucked into a thing and then just inundated by something that seems like just like a vomiting of a bunch of ideas. I mean, the musical, even the musical things, like just
no, I like those. Like musical, don't fuck with those.
Moments. There was, I liked the musical moments. I liked them. I just, they didn't make any sense at all in the midst of the rest of the whatever else is
absolutely
going on.
Absolutely not.
They were nice welcome respite.
That was like that's like the one.
But yeah, they didn't.
The
make any
one
sense.
Exception to the rule, and let's say the rule is that like. Be something, right? Like, don't be everything, like be something. If you're going to be over the top, like let's not bring it back down to the ground, let's just stay up over the top, let's make everything a joke, let's make everything extreme. Don't like vacillate between the two or like throw in these random ass plot lines as just a way to keep moving. Like it felt like, oh, we've got to just keep moving in some direction, let's have this person try to kill this person. It was like random. But the only exception to that rule, I think, is that if you have Ben Platt as a leading man, you put that boy on stage and you make him fucking sing. I don't care what the situation is. I would literally have him come on, break the fourth wall, say, sorry, guys, I'm just going to take a singing break, sing as Ben Platt, and then go back into character, and I'd still be okay with it.
That's virtually what happens.
Yeah, that pretty is much. Essentially what happens.
It's lovely.
So what I would say... I think we should get into spoilers pretty soon. It's funny because I think in a lot of ways I don't disagree with your descriptions. It's just that most of the things you're describing as negatives for you were positives for me. Like you were saying that it's a bonkers show that's trying to do everything, and that's exactly why I liked it. It's a show that's like desperately afraid that you will ever get bored, and so is constantly just coming up with new stuff to throw at you, which I agree that in terms of long-term effectiveness, you know, diminishes it and means that like there are like all these things, like you said, that happen that should have this weight and ultimately they don't. But as just this sort of like really fun over the top experience, I really enjoyed it. And I think that, I mean, the one thing I would also bring up in terms of the high school context is I agree that it's not supposed to be pure realism. I mean, it is supposed to be very, very heightened and ridiculous, but I do think that it is speaking to this idea of how much pressure I think is on at least certain kinds of high school students, like quote unquote elite high school students, and this idea that high school is really where you get kind of slotted into the thing that's going to determine the rest of your life, because you got to do well in high school in order to get to a prestigious university, in order to like then be like on the professional track you need to do. So I don't think that comes out of nowhere. I think that it's ridiculous in it's, you know, done to a ridiculous level in the show, but I think there's something also real that it's also trying to depict at the same time. I think part of the challenge is that there's so much that's ridiculous in the show that the more anything that's trying to be emotionally grounded, it doesn't really come across. It all just comes across as sort of, you know, like rapid fire ADD kind of storytelling. But I do think there's some stuff in there that maybe doesn't really get unpacked as much as it should.
I think it does have an audience. I think we just happen to like be at the line of polarization, like because Maria really, really likes it, and I knew she would. The second I turned it on, I was like, "She's gonna love this," and I cannot stand it. And she got home and loved it, And I knew Daryl wouldn't. I didn't really know where you'd fall, Anthony. Sometimes I feel like you're a little too highbrow for this stuff, but apparently not. Apparently your brow's just right.
Well, I think I was also I was set up for this because I read there's this Emily Nussbaum profile of Ryan Murphy that made me a lot more interested in him, because I have to admit that all the show before that I've watched the shows and thought they were okay, but wasn't that interested in him. But like this profile of him, like, and of this person where he like talks about how people think he's a campy showrunner, but actually he thinks of himself as being much more baroque and like making these like very deliberate choices to go over the top. I'm still not going to say this is a great show, but I think it made me think that there's something interesting going on here, even if it doesn't entirely work.
Sorry, I keep cutting off your transition to spoilers, but like it's a little bit good for like the attention span issues that like younger generations, including ours, I feel like even we are affected by the internet, right? Like our attention spans are so short now that like it makes sense for that audience, I feel like, to just like kind of like drop this, like we don't need to worry about this plot line anymore, let's just do this, you know, like nobody even notices or forgets except for me and Daryl, watchful eyes. Okay, we can talk about spoilers.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about spoilers. I think the first big spoiler, and again, if you don't want to be spoiled for any of the big twists in The Politician, you should stop listening now. The first big one is at the end of the first episode, which is that up until that point, we've basically seen this as a race between Peyton and River, who is his like political rival, but also his friend, tutor. I think they were sort of in a romantic relationship too. And then at the end of the episode, or not even actually at the end,
it's like
I don't
half
know, 80% of the way through the episode.
It's literally like 30 minutes into the episode, you're like, one of the main characters just killed himself. What is happening? Like, it's just, anyway, go on.
Right. And then his girlfriend, so it doesn't even end on the suicide though. It ends with, then there's this assembly. It's the one of the two moments where Ben Platt is like, hello, I'm an incredibly good singer. I will now sing you a song. And then the character Alice, who was River's girlfriend, decides to sort of step in and say she's going to run in his place. And that's really setting up the race that the rest of the season is about.
Yes.
So much happens in that first
episode.
The first I did check
episode.
A few times.
Yeah, me
like,
too. Over and over again.
Episode?
Like three times I checked. Because I was like, there's no way. What are we doing? There's so much happening right now. But wait, I forgot one pre-spoiler thing, which is I think that the show did really well with having an inclusive cast and like cast of characters. And it wasn't like, it was interesting because on the one hand, this is a show about politics, and politics really kind of loves to categorize and label. And so there was a lot of like the gay vote and the Haitian vote and kind of like this candidate is a fluid, you know, non-gender conforming person, you know, or whatever it might be. But then there was also this like layer above that that was just like, this is how things are at like a school in Malibu for a bunch of seniors in high school. Like this is just, there is a ton of diversity. Everyone's different. Everyone's, you know, figuring their shit out. And it wasn't like a big thing. You know what I mean? There was no like big coming out moment. There was no like big, it was just,
yeah,
this is life. And I really appreciated that about it. And I just felt like I needed to say that.
That was, I think, part of what I was trying to explain earlier was that it felt like it did have this, you know, diversity in the cast and people who are sort of very aware of, you know, quote unquote, social justice, and who talk about it and make jokes about it. And so like mostly it's never, essentially never preachy about it, but at the same time, it never suggests that they're idiots for taking that seriously. Like, you know, that they can make jokes about the sort of non-gender conforming woman of color who's running, you know, with Alice, but it's never at the expense of her identities. It's always about who she is as a character. And I think they do like a really, you know, one of the things that they genuinely do well is like, they're still able to be funny without, you know, like trivializing the characters. I think maybe where you guys were talking about it maybe being a little trivializing is in some of the plot points, like, for example, the way it deals with River's suicide, which is given a lot of weight for about 5 minutes, and then it basically gets mentioned like once every episode or two and then forgotten.
Yeah. Ooh. And then he becomes a ghost character.
He does, which I actually thought the scenes between him and Ben Platt after his death are reasonably affecting, partly because it's not like it's implied that, you know, that they were both closeted gay teenage boys. But like that doesn't necessarily isn't like the dominant tone, like that there was also this friendship that sort of wasn't necessarily tied to any romantic or sexual relationship they had. And I don't know, I found that weirdly affecting.
Yeah, I did too. It also, like, it was one of those, it was a strange thing where, like, there's no way that he could have been the product of the Ben Platt character's imagination because he was so much better than him. I don't know. So much more human than him. So it seemed to me, it made me miss that character in the show. And that's maybe correct. That's why he got rid of him, because he was the only human one of all the people that we meet.
Wait, everybody else is
quite one-dimensional.
I missed whoever we're talking about, and it's gotten into a point where I'm interested again. Who are we talking about?
Oh, the River, the guy.
River.
Oh, yeah. He was an interesting character, indeed.
Yeah, and remains so as a ghost. But it's a little bit confusing because it's like, oh, how did this Ben Platt character ever actually have this relationship with this guy? Because he doesn't appear to have any trace of this emotional capacity outside of this, right?
Yeah.
And like, maybe that's part of the plot, right? But he kind of gets it later on.
A little bit in his relationship with his mother.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's fair.
But it's true that like in so many other scenes, he's a character who you just sort of like can really like see the flop sweat, and he's just so slick in a way that feels not slick or charming at all, and so it's sort of hard to understand like what anyone else, I mean, again, politically, but also just in terms of this like this friendship that you're talking about.
I don't know, I feel like the showrunners made a mistake with the Ben Platt character, because they're essentially leading us to believe that he's some sort of sociopath, and like I just don't see it that way. I actually think he is definitely more type A than your average creative feeler, sensitive person. But like, I don't see him lacking in emotions. Like, that's not really the way they're like trying to get you to believe that he's a sociopath. But like,
right.
It's not going to be that. We know it's not going to be that. He cares about being president. He cares about his friendship. I think it's more so his desperate need for validation is like the core of who he is. And he found this person who he felt like he could be safe with other than his mom. You know what I mean? And I think that is the ties that bind he and River and him. But I do think that like River was a bit of a bizarro character in that like, he literally said everything that came into his mind. Like, it's just, I don't know. It was really confusing to me, the whole thing, because on the one hand, I was like, what kind of character comes out at a school assembly and admits that they've wanted to kill themselves? And then I thought, wow, that's a great thing to put on TV though. Like, maybe not at a school assembly, but like, if you're feeling alone, like if you're feeling and having those thoughts, like say it. Reach out, like do something, you know what I mean? Like ask for help, like help will come. And so that was a great thing. And then he ended up killing himself anyway. And he gives this speech at the end where he's like, I feel so much that I couldn't find any positive energy to balance it out. And like almost makes it sound like it was like the right call to kill himself. And I just like,
yeah,
it like erased all of the goodwill and like all of the kind of good faith I had put in the idea of like him talking about this, you know, like as like, let's set a good example, right? Like this is a healthier way to deal with that. Yeah, it just really rubbed me the wrong way, that part for sure.
Yeah, I think that is I felt exactly the same way about that. I was like, oh yeah, they're doing this. This is like, especially given his position and status, like it's refreshing to see him talk about it. And then it's like, oh wait, but then he just kills himself. And then not only does he just kill himself, he also justifies it in a way that seems inevitable. And like you said, like almost like it suggests like this is the right way. This is the thing that he needed to do. And it's really hard to square that. It's possibly a very admirable, challenging storytelling decision to say that, right? Like maybe that is a point of view, and maybe that's like definitely not going to be a popular point of view. Maybe that's a bravery to express that in a program like this, but I don't think it is. And also it just like there, Baroque is a very interesting, you brought that up when you were talking about the criticism, Anthony, of that he sees himself as Baroque, and like the word, now I can see why you would paste this in with something that is essentially madcap at parts and like, you know, lightly irreverent at part. Like I can see how you would see that as a bold, like articulated choice of like intentional filmmaking. It doesn't work at all. It's offensive and it is infuriating.
Yeah, there's a really thin line between brave and reckless, you know? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't even feel like I could give Murphy and the other showrunners any credit for bravery, honestly, because it feels like it's not really straddling the line. It just feels wildly into the reckless zone with that one, you know?
I agree. That I mean, I guess, like, I do think there is, again, like, a seed of recognizable human behavior there that I think that, you know, in my experience with people who have, you know, suicidal ideation, suicidal tendencies, like, you know, that it can sort of come out as this thing of like, that in your head, everything, that it just makes sense, right? Well, if like, this is the right thing to do for everyone. And that like, even if you've sort of like escaped from that kind of thinking once, that doesn't mean you're going to escape from it forever, and that you're still at risk. But like that, all of that is like stuff that you sort of have to project onto the episode because it just moves so fast. And like, ultimately what it feels like is a plot point. It's just like, all right, we're going to get River out of the way so that we can set up the real plot that we're going to focus on. And so in that sense, it really cheapens it because it feels like, you know, okay, this is just another story point that we're going to move on to. And so we're still kind of in the first episode, but maybe we can talk a little bit about then, maybe we should talk about Peyton's running mate, Infinity, who we are introduced to as having cancer, an unidentified kind of cancer that sort of makes you immediately suspicious. And then over the course of basically an episode or two, we discover that she does not have cancer. And in fact, her grandmother, played by Jessica Lange, has been poisoning her in order to get free shit. What did we think about that storyline?
I just realized I spoiled this earlier. Sorry to everyone.
Well, you sort of did it in a vague way, but you didn't say who it was.
yeah, I didn't. And also, if you couldn't see this coming, then it's like you have other problems. Like they telegraph it. There's moments of potential doubt, but not really. And then
it takes like an episode and a half for you to be absolutely positive that that's what it is. So like, sorry for
and you're pretty and sure to start with, right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's where I started.
I mean, I basically said what I thought of it before. Oh, really? What?
The moment that she came on camera, I thought it was Munchausen's. Just because everything had bonkers up until then. And she was talking with that baby voice.
Logical they would do that.
Yeah. And isn't like a baby voice like a big tell? Like when, you know what I mean? That you're being like Munchausen'd by proxy. I don't know where I learned that or what made me think that, but
it's also a big story point in Sharp Objects, which we talked about last year.
Well, and then there's like that obviously spurred my interest in it. So then I watched all the other stuff about Munchausen by proxy. The whole catalyst for Munchausen by proxy is to like get adoration for caring for someone, and like caring for an adult doesn't get as much adoration as caring for a child. So like children who are being Munchausened by proxy are being infantilized and like infantilized themselves. That could like, don't, I'm not like a doctor or detective, but like, that's just something I tended to notice. And even in Sharp Objects, what's her face? Emma, like spoke in a different voice to her mom. And you know what I mean? Like kind of baby dolled herself when she was around her parents and mom. So I don't know. That is what it is. But anyways.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's possible. And I think that would actually, for me, that would excuse her performance a bit. Like I really found her performance grating and annoying. And so like if that was part of it, it's like, oh, okay, that's better. Like she was trying to do that.
She definitely was. But, the actress was definitely trying to do that because she's in Set It Up and she doesn't sound like that at all.
Right.
Yeah, right. Okay. I didn't like this plot point either for similar reasons to the suicide one, but I mean, at the same time, I'm sensitive being oversensitive. Like if this isn't really affecting that many people, I'm not going to get that mad that it's used as a narrative device in this way, because don't be too sensitive about everything. But like, I don't know. It came out of nowhere. It seemed a little bit like callous. Like, okay, so in the show, they actually criticize Ben Platt's character for using it in a callous manner within the fiction, right? It's like, oh, you knew about this. You hid it because it would encourage your election chances. And to me, I feel like that's a meta thing that's probably unconscious. you use this for the show to encourage your entertainment value, and it was shitty and cheap, right? Like, and also just immoral.
There's a distinction between taking like something that's like a real world issue that affects people and telling a story about it that we may or may not think is worthy of it versus actually exploiting a real person. But I see what you're saying.
Yes.
That's a fair
point. Yeah. It's not a one-to-one thing, obviously. But yeah, I don't know. It just felt like, why did you do this? Why did you do this? What did it do for the show overall that you needed in here? I don't know.
It was like a mechanic. Yeah, it felt like a mechanic that was meant to just like a detail that was tacked on to an existing plot structure to just make it like blow your mind 10% more, when like it does much worse things than just blow your mind 10% more. It like actually affects your like what am I looking at? Like what is happening? Like, okay, Peyton needs a deep dark secret as he enters his political career for real, right? Like he's so afraid of having any, you know, black marks on his resume or whatever, that he is willing to do anything to kind of keep clean. And then let's give him this horrible kind of secret that he has to do the wrong thing, and let's let it burden him and try to hide it and all of these things. Like that's the structure. And they're like, here's this weird, maybe his secret can be, let's bring Munchausen syndrome into this. Like what in the world? Do you know what I mean? Like there's so many things to choose from. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like they had to mature everything. And I guess that makes sense, because I didn't realize, Anthony, that this show is based, every season is based on an election. I didn't know that. I assumed that there would be many elections in the future, right? But I didn't know that we were going one election at a time. And so I guess maybe, you know, that helps me a little bit. But yeah, I just felt like there are so many options to choose from, and that we didn't need to like mature everything so quickly. Like this could have been like a high school teeny bopper Glee style thing, and maybe had more like power to it, because the topics we're talking about, like suicide and like parental abuse essentially, are really fucking serious. Like they matter. And I don't know if it makes sense to like weave them into this like teeny bopper thing that's like grown up beyond its years, and but also isn't grown up beyond its years and is like laughing at a lot of things. It's very like confusing to me, you know?
Mm-hmm. But it does, I can't get away from your, the Baroque comment, because it all sort of makes sense once you start thinking about that, because it's like, I'm going to take these very individual, unique pieces and assemble them in a way that is itself unique, right? But hopefully additive. So like a Munchausen by proxy is in that way kind of like, this is this strange ornate object or artifact that I've found, and I'm going to apply it in my pastiche with these other things, including like teenage political ambition or lifelong political ambition. And then the final thing will hang together in a way that is you know, beautiful or whatever, and intentional despite its random assortment of individual pieces, right? Like it's like the set dressing that Jordan was talking about too, right? So I mean, in that way I can kind of step back and admire it from like a purely artistic perspective, but I think it just comes back again to that thing where it's like it feels slightly irresponsible because it's like it's holding that goal above all other considerations in a way that then feels a little bit cold.
No, that I think that's all fair. I think there are things about the way that storyline is handled that I thought were well done. In particular, when the Infinity character finds out about it, she immediately becomes a much more interesting character than she was before. And I think she reacts with this very realistic anger and confusion and this sense of, you know, that it's sort of like this, like just angry at everyone and like just like nothing makes sense for her anymore. And it's sort of like she just becomes this kind of really interesting loose cannon for maybe an episode or so. And I think it also shows like interesting things about the Peyton character, because that he was willing, that he did want to tell her eventually. But it, like, it really took him a while, and that, you know, that he was willing to use it to his own political advantage at the same time. So I thought like there were some interesting dramatic moments that they got out of it, but I agree that, you know, if you're sort of just uncomfortable with the idea of using that in this sort of very fast paced dramatic context where nothing really gets investigated or played out fully, like I think that's totally fair. And maybe then we should sort of just move ahead to kind of how the story wraps up, because there's a lot of twists, which I don't think we need to go into all of them. But ultimately, Peyton, the election, on the day of the election, it looks like he has swung things in his direction. But then his opponent, Astrid, I think I've been calling her, sorry, I've been calling her Alice, because that's actually Peyton's girlfriend, but Astrid is his opponent, and she has, she decides that she's going to withdraw from the race because she thinks she's about to lose. And so he wins, but without like quote unquote winning an election. And then it actually comes out later in the episode that the school board and the principal counted the votes, and he lost by a handful of votes. So he didn't even win the election. And then, you know, very, very shortly after that, it comes out that he knew about the Munchausens by proxy, and didn't tell anyone right away. And so he has to step down. And so like, it's basically in this couple of episode span, basically loses everything that he cares about. And I thought that was reasonably effective. I mean, this was really where like the kind of accelerated storytelling that you guys are talking about started to wear me down a little bit. But I definitely thought that the way everything sort of fit together at the end, and the secret came out, and the way that like he sort of wrestled with this thing that he tried to do the right thing but really hadn't been a good person in this, I thought that was all reasonably effective.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's good, worth making a distinction between the end of the season and then the trailer for the next season that was a full episode. Like, so I think the actual end, which is up until the second last episode, was satisfying in that way that you're talking about, especially with kind of like the interplay between him and his mother, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, and their kind of like their parallel paths of where they come to their new start or whatever, and her giving that advice to the son and everything like that, all worked pretty well for me and was the closest I felt to, I mean, I did feel sympathy or empathy for the main character. Goodness, why did I forget?
Peyton.
Both the actor. Peyton. At that part, like that's the part where I think Jordan's point earlier comes back, where it's like, oh, he wasn't actually a sociopath the whole time. He was misdirected in his energies, and he has like an immense amount of enthusiasm, but it was just packaged incorrectly. But he is a feeling person, and this is where you get that. And then they've just tacked on another episode that it just goes again, another time where it just throws you completely for a loop and sets up the next season, I guess. Super presumptuous, but I guess it's a big deal, like that Netflix has signed, so it's probably in the can already. Or
oh,
whatever.
Yeah. I mean, they already, they picked it up for 2 seasons.
Of course they did. Great.
I mean, that's how I felt too. And like, I probably would have felt better if they had just not included that last episode.
Yeah, they could have
like
ended
if they had
it.
Just ended yeah. it. And then I would have been like, maybe I'm interested in watching another season. But they set it up in this whole bridge episode, and it just came away with like, what? No, that's, I don't want to see any of that. This looks awful. Like, any character development that he seems to have made is erased, because at the end of the final episode, you're left with like, oh, he's going to into a new election cycle because he knows that the candidate he's running against is in a plural marriage, and he has that in his back pocket to destroy them. Like, that's all. So you're like, any character building gone, any of your journey gone, like, you're just a shitbag again, out for number one. And somehow you've gotten all these people who you screwed over multiple times to come and not only like follow you, but actually be the ones to go and encourage you to do this shitty, horrible thing again. Like, what? How did we get here? This doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah. No, I was watching Bette Midler for like 20 minutes, and I was like, did we put a different show on accidentally? Like, what?
Yeah.
I don't understand
yes.
what I'm looking at.
I had the same confusion.
And Judith Light, right? Bette Midler and Judith Light. Again, the cast in this thing is amazing. Like, it's crazy.
Outstanding casting. And
it's
then
crazy.
We've got Bette Midler for 20 minutes. I don't know where the fuck she came from. And I don't know what's going on. And the story's over. The story that I just spent like 7 hours, like, oddly intense about, and then now we're with Bette Midler and I don't know what's going on. And also my whole like I the whole time I just wanted him to be president. Like, I really want him to be president. I actually care about that, and that just feels like it's fading further and further away. Like, what is the point of a season 2? I mean, I guess he's gonna get back into it, right? But like, and then his friend James said it was over, and then he's with them 3 years later in New York. Like, what? Can we pick a lane, people? I don't know. I don't know, buddy. I don't know, Anthony. I blame you on
so
this.
So Jordan, so you said you're 35 minutes away from the end of this finale, so we should probably explain, just so it's clear to you, that so what is actually happening in this okay. final episode is that so we're seeing this I think she's the majority leader in the New York State Senate.
I saw that part. She's gonna be the Veep.
Yes. Right. And so what's actually going to happen, though, is that while there's this sense that she's kind of basically not really campaigning for that role anymore, because she just wins every election. And so one of his old team members is working for a campaign and sees this vulnerability. And then I forget exactly how they figure this out, but they also figure out this other vulnerability that she has, which is that she's in a throuple. And so he basically decides to run again against her. So it's setting up. So the next season will be about the election between Peyton and this head of Didi, the head of the New York State Senate. And it was interesting because I feel like a lot of the reviews I read were sort of like the confusion about the final episode for them was this sense of, wait, this is a much more interesting show. Why did we have to watch 7 episodes about this high school election when in fact the more interesting story is about this new election that's not going to come until season 2.
I mean, I think that's valid too. I feel like it's an either or. It's like either one would have been an interesting story treated seriously on its own, and then instead they're just mashed together in this weird way where the link from one to the other seems super tenuous and also not even that interesting. I don't know.
I think to me that actually tracked. I mean, I understand that like it is confusing when the episode starts intentionally. So I think But to me, what's going on there is basically at the end of that whole high school storyline, at the end of episode 7, Peyton basically hits rock bottom. He gets what he thought he wanted, but then it all falls apart. And then there's also this sort of lingering question of, does that actually make him a better person? Like the fact that he's giving up on some of these bigger ambitions, does that actually allow him to be happier and less sort of Machiavellian in some ways? And so then we meet him again a few years later. And in some ways he is, you know, he's just this sort of sad, you know, bar pianist at NYU. And it's sort of charming, but he's also like this alcoholic. So he's still in some ways lost, right? And so it's that like, that he doesn't become himself again. He doesn't like kind of crawl out of that rock bottom until he decides he's going to run, which is sort of weirdly colored because we know that part of the reason he's running is for the really fucked up fact that he is going to use this sort of tawdry piece of personal, you know, baggage against her. But I think that's sort of essentially what it is. Like he doesn't get his happy ending, that the season doesn't have a happy ending for Peyton until he decides he's running again.
Yeah, and even then it's not a happy ending, but that's the point, right? Because it's like, oh, he just went back to his old vice. Like he ditched the drinking for his old vice, which is political machinations, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep, pretty much.
It's interesting. It's all on paper. I feel like the whole thing is interesting and sounds like it would be super good to watch, but I'm left not wanting to watch any more of it at all. I don't know. I even while I was watching it, I didn't really think that, I guess I hadn't analyzed with it or sat with it enough to be like, how do I really feel about it? I knew I wasn't kind of like, you know, I wasn't in the camp where I was like, I love this, but I didn't know that I disliked it to the extent that I dislike it talking about it now.
And Jordan, it sounds like you are not going to be watching season 2.
I'm done talking about it, I think.
That's fair. All right. Well, I think that's pretty much everything I wanted to say. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff about it, and I'm excited to see season 2. Maybe we won't be talking about it on the podcast.
Well, we will have to. I feel like it's too interesting.
Yeah, maybe we will. I mean, I'm probably going to have to finish it. It still compels me. Yeah, like just like Peyton is compelled to be president, like I am compelled.
And some of the performances and just individual moments almost made the whole thing worthwhile, because there were some just really out of the park lines delivered by some fantastic actors and actresses in this. So,
I could go without seeing Ben Platt ever cry.
Does
he have an ugly crying face. I mean, good for him to committing to his performance and stuff, but like, whoa. They leave it there for like a minute and a half too. Ryan Murphy's like, give him 90 seconds. 90 seconds of crying. Just zoom in. Slow zoom. And it's just like, we don't need that at all. How about a single glistening tear? Anyway, sorry to shit on Ben Platt there at the end. I know that wasn't expected.
If you like the show and you like Ben Platt crying, because we've been trying to do maybe some more like recommendations for people who like it, for even in the case of, I guess, negative reviews like this one, I would say if you haven't checked out Dear Evan Hansen, either in soundtrack form, there's a lot of it is on YouTube. I recommend that. Ben Platt was the original star. He originated the role of Evan Hansen. You get a lot of singing. You get a lot of Ben Platt crying. Laura Dreyfus, who plays one of his main campaign people, was also a supporting actress in Dear Evan Hansen. So in some ways, it's like a little Dear Evan Hansen reunion. So I highly recommend people check that out. And also, in some ways, it's about this high school student who is unlikable in a lot of ways, but sort of as you get to know him, you like him a little bit more. It deals with suicide, but I think in a much more serious and thoughtful way.
Well, and if you're like vibing on this Baroque ADD style of Ryan Murphy, then Glee also is Glee's really old and you've probably already seen it if you're watching The Politician to begin with, but Glee's another recommendation. It has similar vibes without like the same ability to make me feel like.
Yeah, I liked Glee more too. I mean, I eventually fatigued out of Glee and probably for the same reasons that this one kind of like overwhelmed me, but it took longer, and probably because that was a network show and there was like some requirement to have to stretch things out a little bit more. But I mean, I would rather watch Glee than this, really, I think.
And the like little breaks we're talking about, the little song breaks that were like so needed in this, like there's like three per episode in Glee. So like if you're musically inclined and you really appreciate like beautifully sung songs and harmonies and things like that, like Glee.
Also, they make sense there plot wise that those things happen.
Sometimes they just completely give up on a plot. Like, do you remember that Glee opened with what's his face, the coach guy? Mr. Shu, whatever his name is, the main blonde guy, he started out and was like, I don't know anything about choreography. Like, I'll never be able to choreograph anything. And then like two episodes in, he's like, here is the dance moves that you're supposed to do. I mean, that's a minute detail, but they did that a lot in Glee. So like, don't, if you're like a plot perfectionist, you're going to struggle with Glee as well.
Fair.
I just coined that term, by the way, plot perfectionist.
That is like the opposite of me.
Yeah, seriously, you're like, I don't care what they show, just show me stuff,
just keep it coming. Well, so next week we're gonna review El Camino, the new movie that is a sequel to Breaking Bad from the Breaking Bad team. It is an original movie on Netflix, although I think it's playing in some theaters, so you can also check it out there. And I think that pretty much wraps it up, right?
That's it.
And Succession. Yep. After that, I can't wait.
All right. Well, just as a quick reminder, if you enjoy the show, you can leave us a review in Apple Podcasts, any other podcast app. Also, it's great if you want to subscribe. You can also leave us feedback by emailing us at originalcontent@techcrunch.com. And everyone, have a great weekend.